You're listening to the 21st Century Change Agent Show. This podcast is for those who are always looking for ways to grow as a person and as a leader. On this show, you'll find no ordinary conversations, as I will be speaking with unique people who are already rewriting the narrative. My name is Barbara Ziga, and I help companies to achieve more by putting their people first. Head to Lake House Consulting website to find out more and to subscribe to a bite-sized, hand-picked newsletter from me. Thank you for tuning in and get ready to receive your weekly dose of inspiration. Hi everyone, and thank you so much for joining me on another Change Agent episode. On today's episode, I'm joined by two guests from both sides of the Atlantic. Lily Fothergill from the UK and Pranam Lipinski from the US. Both are Gen Z experts in their own right and ways, through conducting research, working with organisations, universities and digital natives themselves. On this conversation, we talked to all Gen Z from their greatest potential, as well as some of the dark sides of being digital native. This episode is packed with practical ways of finding, engaging, communicating, employing, and getting the best out of Gen Z. So have a notepad handy, and here is my conversation with Lily and Pranam. Welcome on the Change Agent Show, Lily and Pranam. I'm very excited to have you both here and talk everything Gen Z.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So before we start unpacking the notions of Gen Z or digital natives, I would love for both of you to tell us a little bit more about yourselves and what made you so interested and involved in Gen Z.
I'm Lily and I run an organization called Half Full. Essentially, we're a social media company on a mission to make it easier for young people to access the world of work. We kind of got into this because we started running our own events and our own lots of projects around uni, essentially, which we marketed through social media. So we'd kind of use influencers at the time, just message our friends to share our events and to start communicating with people online. And what we didn't realize that we were doing is growing a business through kind of modern marketing techniques. We realized that we had a product that was really, really important. And we also realized a big problem with employers and businesses is that they don't know how to use social media to connect to a Gen Z audience. There's a massive gap of knowledge and connectivity, which we're here to fill essentially and help businesses really get to grips with engaging Gen Z online.
Yes. So I started to become fascinated with Gen Z as I was running a company called Door of Clubs, which focused on connecting employers to university student organizations in the United States. And we would do a bunch of research for the employers on these students because they wanted to learn how to recruit better. And I started to see how different this generation was than millennials and how there were a lot of misunderstandings about Gen Z. And it was very eye-opening to see how different they were from millennials. And so having that understanding gap is where I also, you know, I became passionate about. And creating more empathy between generations, I think, is an important cause because there is such a gap in any generation. But now with Gen Z, I feel like technology has only increased the gap of understanding between generations. So that's what made me really interested in that. And then I've just continued doing research and speaking with companies and working with companies on helping them understand and bridge the gap between their generations and Gen Z.
So before we dive into sort of the deep end of this conversation, I'd like to begin with setting the scene and defining what we mean with Gen Z and looking at what Gen Z is and what is not. So Pranam, I'd love for you to set us up here as you have done a huge amount of research in Gen Z. So we'd love to hear what the data has got to say. And then Lily, perhaps you could reflect on that as a Gen Zer and just and see if that data resonates with you and perhaps fill any gaps.
Sounds good. So I and my organization goes with the age range of 9 to 26 at the moment, which is birth dates 95 to 2012. And there are different research organizations that maybe might go with 1994 to 2011 or 90, 2007 to 2012 or 13, but it's somewhere in that range. So it's important to know that that age range of 9 to 26. They're the largest generation on Earth. They've surpassed millennials recently, and they'll double in the workplace over the next 5 years. And so they're the most rapidly growing generation. So that means there'll be college talent or early talent going into companies for at least the next decade or more. And they have other nicknames such as iGeneration, Postmillennials, Deltas, Transformation Generation, Gen Z, Gen Z, whatever you want to call it. And yeah, it's a very, very interesting, fascinating generation. I've done a lot of research on it, but hopefully that sets the stage in terms of who they are and what their range is from what we've come across.
Yeah, I'll build on that. First of all, for full transparency, I'm 25 years old. So depending on which of the definitions you use, I either am on or, but I'm definitely on the cusp either way. And I've got two younger sisters, so I'm still kind of immersed in that world, and also a lot of mates still at uni. I'd say that Gen Z as a large category of people, first of all, do not fit in a box. I think that's the first thing to say, is that you cannot categorize the millions of young people that fit into the Gen Z age category. But the idea and the notion of identity has become incredibly fluid with Gen Z. And I think we've seen a massive unpicking of these boxes and categories, which we've previously used to define people, male and female. Now Gen Z are like, what? Why are you trying to fit me into this box? I want to be, and I'm non-binary, I'm fluid. So I think this fluidity of identity has been incredible to evolve, and that's come with the growth of technology and communications. It's almost like this not being completely asphyxiated with the place that you grew up or where you were born or your literal side-by-side neighbor community, but the communities that you invest in online and the communities that you can access through social media and through these niche groups and individuals that you find who could be a million miles away, but you have something in common, so you can talk about it. And that just is the goes to show through Facebook and the literally millions of groups that there are popping up on Facebook every day, on Twitter, the threads and who people follow, on TikTok, the trends that evolve every single day. These are communities with specific interests that Gen Zs feel like they can identify with, and that means that they feel like they have a sense of connection and community on social media more than anything. I think one also really important thing to say about Gen Z is the climate that we've grown up in. Essentially, terrorism was in the back of 9/11 is kind of what the rhetoric we grew up in. So that massive tightening of security alongside climate change, being told every single day in class that the world is going to end. So it's like, well, what's the point in building a future here if the world's going to end there, which leads to a massive, the depression and the kind of social angst that a lot of Gen Z have. And the fact also that we grew up in around now two recessions. So we've heard our parents talking about the first recession in 2008 and how hard that hit. And a lot of us have seen, family members really struggle and parents not be able to pay off rent and mortgages, and now we're into lockdown, corona, whatever the next recession is going to entail. So I think that's also fake news, Trump, all these things that are massive political and social factors add to this kind of this weighing of consciousness of Gen Z and this weighing of, oh my god, what are we going to do? Like, what are we going to do with this hand that we've been dealt? So I think there's some important factors.
And then, and we are all hoping that Gen Z are going to, save the world for all of us.
No pressure.
So why are things the way they are? And I think every generation asks this question to the generations before, who have created the systems, who have created the processes that don't necessarily serve the future generations anymore. And us millennials are asking that to baby boomers and Gen X, and I'm sure, Gen Z have got the same questions to us. So I would love to explore that in a little bit more detail. And what do you, whether through data or through the conversations with, your peers, what are Gen Z asking these questions about, or this particular question about? Why are things the way they are?
It's really, you can't play a blame game, because it would be really easy to. And I do blame leadership. I do blame capitalism. I blame the prioritization of individualism and the putting the person as a center rather than society or community as the center. And I think these factors, when they come into play, leads to the centering of individuals at the expense of anything else. And we've seen that with, you know, the kind of cis white man being the center of all discussion, all narratives, all conversations. And now we're seeing a backlash against that. We're saying, no, what about Black women? Where are they in your diversity and leadership programs? What about disabled people? Do they have access to your services? We're asking questions about accessibility that haven't been asked before, and we're demanding the answers. And I think that's a difference. And it could have only happened in this trajectory. You know, women wouldn't have fought for women's rights if they still didn't have access to certain forms of education, or they, you know, there's a trajectory to the way things unfold. But I think consistently leadership of not just the UK and not just America, but in a lot of Western countries, has really like drawn on this individualization. And Gen Z, I think, are more collective and community orientated, and are more interested in solution. We based problems, not me based problems. And I think that's a big shift. But again, not trying to blame everyone, but I do think there's a lot of people who could be held accountable for why we are here.
Yeah, it's such a deep question. And it's well said, Lily. And I think it also even goes to, like, if I was going to point to one key difference in humans now in general, that because what you get a lot of times on the other side is, oh, they're just like every other generation was as they were growing up, and they'll grow out of it and they'll mature and they'll just be like us. And the truth is that humans have never grown up at a time when they had access to a smartphone in their pockets at, you know, in fourth grade. And what a smartphone and what technology does for us in our brains, we don't fully understand yet. And in terms of anxiety, in terms of loneliness, in terms of connection, it really changes a human brain. And you can make the truthful statement that technology and our own genetic culture and evolution, it's outpaced our ability to keep up with it. So, you know, you think about Gen Z and growing up young, and if adults who are well-formed and supposed to be mature and all are struggling with the effects of technology and what it's doing to us, then Gen Z, they grew up with this since they were young, and we as humans are not equipped. And so it's creating massive amounts of anxiety, massive amounts of, you know, identity searching, identity finding, fluidity, all these things that have dismantled systems overnight, whether mentally or societally. And I think it does get to this root cause of technology. We've never faced anything nearly as powerful as the technology that we have now. And you have young people who have it since they were in the fourth grade. And it's changed everything.
I totally agree. And I think there are, you know, what you both talked about, there's probably two key things there. So from Lily's point of view, that, you know, inclusion, equity, and all of those, you know, sort of buzzwords, I guess, that are out there now, are an absolute expectation for a Gen Zer when they do enter a space or enter a business world. It's an expectation. It's not just a sort of sidekick project that someone is doing somewhere in the organization. It has to be a breathing, living space. And then for now, what you talked about around the anxiety, identity issues, mental health, that is a huge thing, and obviously a topic in itself, and something that we will pick up on a little bit later on in our conversation as well, because I think when we do talk about Gen Z, that is something that we do have to touch on as well. But all in all, you know, it does feel like there is, it feels like there is a new and a very powerful generation about to be unleashed. And Pranam, you already mentioned that is the biggest generation out there right now. And, you know, we already have, you know, such Gen Z trailblazers as Malava, Greta, Amanda Gorman. You know, what makes Gen Z so powerful? What is the Gen Z greatest potential, would you say?
I think the potential I'm really interested in, to be honest. I think what we're going to see is creation of a lot more spaces. I think the traditional working world, if we're talking about work or if we're talking about the world in general, I think traditional structures will be destabilized, like Pranam Bhutli articulated, that technology has really helped us question the fundamental structures that we take for granted as part of our day in life. And I cannot wait to see the first board of Gen Zs in leadership positions, and to see these companies gradually get taken over by people who have grown up in that period, because I think it really will drastically change. I think we need to start including Gen Z in more of these conversations as a go-to. I think there's a lot of talk about Gen Z and not much including Gen Z in those conversations. I know I'm on the cusp, but I'd say my 19-year-old sister should be here. She's way smarter than me, and she's been on social media since she was, you know, tiny. And so the way that she interacts with her phone is different to me, and I can see that's only in 6 years difference. The way that she speaks to her friends, and like it is a curse, because she cannot tear herself away, and she replies to Snapchats within a second because that's just what she can do. It's so fast. I think the creativity as well, that there's ways that Gen Z will use technology that we won't have even imagined how to use technology. And we see that in the evolution of TikTok. No trend stays the same for longer than a few days, and it is evolving so quickly. The creativity behind a lot of the channels and the trends, I think, are like a microcosm of what Gen Z is really potential of. And I think this hyper connectivity and hyper awareness, like we said, curse and a blessing. But the blessing is that it's that like always on mentality. And it's almost that, read somewhere earlier, like an immigrant mentality of someone that can pick up cross culture and fit into another culture very quickly and very easily, and start to use language terms and absorb different thought patterns and ways of thinking, and then relate it in a way that they'll progress. And I think that's almost like digital native is like being a digital immigrant. Like you're fitting in all these different pockets of the internet, which means you can transfer all this data, all this behavior, all these new things into producing something else and into questioning the system and the way the world runs. So I think that could massively like change the way we work and the structures that we have for politics, activism and consumerism.
Let me just say that I love this notion of a digital immigrant. I think that probably everyone but Gen Z are digital immigrants, because we've sort of come into these spaces and picked up the words, and we are sort of, you know, half pretending that we get it. And I totally agree with you. You know, I've got a little sister who is 9, and she just about probably sort of falls into that category. Maybe she's even, you know, something beyond that. But even, you know, how she engages with anything digital, with digital media. And, you know, and it's not only digital media, but even how alien they are to telephone conversations. You know, if someone gives her a phone to have a phone conversation with me, she doesn't understand how to have it. She always expects there to be a video on the other end. So it's even little things like that, when you just sit and observe how they engage and interact with those mediums, it's mind-blowing. It's absolutely mind-blowing. And I can't wait to the moment when I'm going to be made redundant from these spaces, and I'm going to be the same sort of old person sat in a corner as we're now looking at our grandparents. But that gap is going to be much shorter and much smaller than what it is today, I think.
Yeah, that's and to support what you both are saying, I think when we think about the potential of this, or where it's going or where it is now, it's the speed of transformation that will be the difference maker. And transformation is something that happens, you know, very slowly in the course of, say, you know, the history of humans. But now with technology and instant ability with everything, and with Gen Zers having the ability to use it in such a way that it's like a tool, it's like a spoon or a fork. Like it's so easy for them to use to make change, to make movements, to make channels, that I think what we're going to see in the future is what might have taken a decade to happen with the Gen Z abilities and their digital immigrant, digital native ways. You're going to see, you know, a decade's worth of progress happen in 3 months. And so I think the speed of transformation is really going to be the difference maker going forward.
No, absolutely agree with that. And hence, again, you know, back to Lily's point, it's so important to have Gen Zers in these spaces, especially when organizations are talking about be it digital transformation, be it how to engage with Gen Z, be it how to engage with communities through building communities and building sense of belonging. These are the perfect people to tell you that. And I know that it feels unnatural for leaders to bring someone on board who is in their early 20s. It just feels absolutely unnatural.
I think we'll probably start to see that erosion of the meaning of age in a way, because it's not actually relevant when you're talking about experience of something that you can only experience if you're living it and if you're using it every single day. Like you just said, Baiba, that's not translatable to someone who's picked up social media in their 60s or 50s. Like, that's only translatable to the people who have literally born in the last 20, 25 years. So I think that will mean less, but I think what there needs to be is a preparation for that shift at the top. And we're only going to see this compatibility of bringing the experience of Gen Zs up if there's space for the people at the top already to allow them to move up. And if that means they have to, you know, create a new system so that they can get more young people in, I think it's 100% worth it. But I think we're seeing this massive, like, generational clash at the minute as well. There's okay boomers, it's millennial vs Gen Z, and all these generation wars.
I totally agree with it. And this is, again, you know, you perfectly, you know, the way you talked about it is, you know, it's about, you know, let's come together, let's build it together. And I think Gen Z is probably maybe younger millennials as well, but Gen Z is the first generation that's all about we, and the sort of that I, the sense of I is sort of dissolved there a little bit rather than the generations before, because the generation before has been all about power. So if you are at the top of the company, it is about your status, it is about your age, obviously comes into that as well. And I absolutely agree that the sooner we start taking these social constructs of, you know, age and gender and all these binary things out of it, the sooner we'll start building something that's actually meaningful and suitable for everyone. And all that to say, you know, Gen Z are just such busy people. They are passionate, they are informed, they have got so much information at their fingertips and at their disposal. And they are part of various societies, they volunteer, they have just turned their sidekick passion into a profitable business. You know, it's just, and I listen to these stories and I always think to myself, how do you do it? How do you manage your time for it? You know, I promise you, you know, older generations often celebrate the fact that today they've changed out of their pajamas and turned up with brushed hair. You know, in no way I'm saying that the older generations are lazy or messy. No way. But for sure, many of us do struggle with all the life's demands. But then Gen Z just seems so effortless, and I might be sort of, you know, building something up that's not there, but that's just how I see it. So how do you do it, you know, while always staying connected and producing the social media content daily? And I've got pen and paper here for some tips because I need to know.
I wish there was a magic silver bullet. I think the truth is that it seems is the key word there. It seems, because social media is a facade that we project onto and that we allow people to see certain snippets of our lives and the bits that we choose for people to see. It doesn't show the whole picture. And this has been a massive thing recently, is that this backlash against the kind of perfect life that we produce on Instagram or on TikTok and with content, towards this more kind of like rugged, authentic, just doing it. I think a lot of people have mental health issues because they try and take too much, me, like us all included. I think it's almost, I don't think we are doing it well, basically. I say that just and purely in my reflection to myself, my poor time management, my lack of actual of time management. But I guess I'm also thinking about the group of young people who are now not at university, are on their gap years, who are either studying different places. You know, life has changed a lot in the last year. So whereas there might have been way more stuff to do, going out and about, meeting friends and socializing, now all people have is time on their phones. And I think that's led to a massive surge in like creativity and people doing a bit of everything. Other than that, probably to the detriment of sleep patterns and just general like life patterns and routines. I think Gen Z is probably not a generation of routine and structure, but more one of doing getting stuff done, basically, but not necessarily in the most healthy and fully streamlined way.
It's no surprise, of course, that the amount of time spent on devices is astronomical for Gen Zers, and especially, and for others in other generations. But it goes back to that technology root that's causing all this. That, you know, we are not used to this. We're not able, and we also need to keep in mind the, you know, I don't know how many of the listeners have watched The Social Dilemma on Netflix about, you know, tech addiction. And we also need to realize that there are thousands, if not millions, of engineers who are designing applications and devices to get more of our time, to take more of our attention. So I'm very empathetic and sympathetic for Gen Z, because I'm a millennial. I'm 35. I'm a little bit more, a step away from being hyper connected. But I do think that it's an empathy and a sympathy for having this nonstop, always on, like Lily said. And it's almost like you're fighting an unfair fight every day, because you're always going to have something that tries to get your attention. So I'm of the very try to be mindful way, where I just try to, you know, device from my devices as much as I can. And it's a very, you're fighting an uphill battle every single day, because so much is trying to capture your attention that has to do with your phone. It's all the time.
And it's tricky, because it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because it's where the validation and the feedback loop comes in as well. As soon as you post on one of your accounts, because obviously you've got to have two accounts, your main account and your Finster account. So it's like you post on one, and then you get positive reinforcement and people like it and comment it. And then you're like, okay, well, let me move to this app. And then you post something on TikTok, and then people do it again. And then you go to Snapchat, and then you're reading this news article. And it's just a constant perpetual cycle. So I think, yeah, it's dangerous. Like, you're fully right. It's a very dangerous cycle, because you feel validated when you're on it as well. And you feel like all your friends are there, all your friends are talking and communicating. Everyone's like in big group chats, and everyone's sharing what they've been up to in the day. You don't want to be the one who's not on there for a minute and missed out on the hilarious story that your mate told has now disappeared. So yeah, it's addictive and it's dangerous.
That is so true. And it quite nicely sort of, I guess, walks into the sort of the next stage of our conversation about the fact that it's not all rainbows and roses. You know, there is quite a dark side of being a digital native and being constantly connected. So, for instance, Samaritans have recorded that the under 25 female suicide rate has risen by 93.8% since 2012. And in the US, there are record rates of mental health concerns among the Gen Z compared to their millennial or Gen X counterparts. And most of it stems from the exposure to harmful material online, from, you know, mass shootings, deportation of immigrants and families being separated, sexual harassment and assault. And these, often teenagers not necessarily know how to process this information and how to rationalize it. And when young people get exposed to this harmful material online, they often deal with it, or ultimately not knowing how to deal with it, they harm themselves to an extent of taking their own lives. And Gen Z not necessarily have the same connection to, for instance, nature as previous generations do. So when they do get lost in this virtual jungle, they have nothing to go back and reconnect to. And social media is distractive. Social media, you know, all the ads and on every single platform desperately fighting to keep your attention on each of the app for the longest. I personally certainly have a very sort of real love-hate relationship with social media. And Lily, I watched a recent webinar with you, and you talked about the fact that a Gen Zer on average is exposed to about 4,000 different ads daily. And I thought that was absolutely mind-blowing. But you also mentioned the fact that you guys are fine with that because you are born in this environment and that's all you know. So it doesn't feel distracting anymore, at least not in a way where you can sort of put your finger on it and say this is distracting the way that we can probably. And for instance, the popularity of TikTok among Gen Zers, and you've talked about it a couple of times as well, it's a perfect example of it. You know, millions of snappy little videos to keep us on the platform, but there is not, you know, a real conversation or storyline, that they're just snappy little videos to keep us distracted and keep us engaged. And all this to say that first and foremost, Gen Zers receive and process information and then communicate it in a very different way than we do. And I'd love to explore this in a little bit more detail from, I guess, two perspectives. So first and foremost, communication, and secondly, mental health. So in terms of communication, there was a beautiful quote that I recently heard. And this is from Alex Wolf. And Alex Wolf has got an amazing show where she philosophically talks about culture, technology, innovation. And she said something really profound, which was, we all have a lot to say, but not a lot of us have got the privilege of being heard. And I thought that that was something really profound. And again, I thought quite nicely sort of, you know, came into this subject as well, in terms of that we just push information out there, but not necessarily we actually have real conversations anymore. So my, I guess, first question on this is, how and where do you have, or how and where Gen Zers have meaningful conversations? And how can, you know, older generations communicate with Gen Zers more effectively?
So I'll give a little analogy, which we kind of use in a lot of our How We Talk to Businesses, actually, which is kind of imagining yourself walking down a very busy high street, and you've got shopfront windows saying sale here, buy me. And you've got, it's very busy and loud, and there's like kind of marketplace, and it's very chaotic. And then you see this one shop that's out of the way, it's quiet, it's dimly lit, it's comfortable, it smells good, and all your friends are in there and they're all talking about the things that you're passionate about, and you just slip into that shop and that is your safe space. So the first example of the busy high street is your standard social media feed, like your Facebook pages, your Instagram feed, with all your ads popping out everywhere. And the second example are the communities that Gen Z build themselves. So that's your digital campfires. So these digital campfires are niche communities around specific subjects, or where groups of young people essentially congregate to talk about their stuff. This could be WhatsApp groups, this could be Snapchat groups, this could be Instagram chats, this could be Facebook groups, less now though, nobody's on Facebook anymore, but we're seeing Discord, we're seeing Clubhouse. So it's like this, but essentially it's a place where people are heard, are all heard, and all feel like they have an opportunity to be listened to and included, which you're so right, Viber. If you post on your Facebook feed or on your Instagram, you're probably going to get flooded in one of the 4,000 ads. If you post in this group of very engaged, much smaller community, you're more likely to get heard and feel that sense of inclusivity. So I think that's with communication, and how to tap into those groups is kind of how we help businesses tap into those groups, essentially. So that is either going through influencers, don't know how in depth to go, but either by communicating with, say, people who are very engaged in these groups and asking them to share information with their groups, or literally just engaging them as a whole and finding mutual incentives. But yeah, there are quiet places on the internet. It's just hard to find them.
That's really interesting. And obviously this notion of digital campfires, I had heard that before as well. Because again, you know, intimacy, it can't be mass produced, can it? And that is the thing. And that is the thing that we are, I think, starting to miss again in this mass, you know, social platforms as you know, Facebooks and Instagrams and Twitters and LinkedIns and everything, and, you know, even Clubhouse to an extent, you know, as they sort of start opening their doors up to more and more people. But yeah, intimacy can't be mass produced. And when obviously Gen Zers start gathering around these campfires where they've got like-minded people who can talk about meaningful things, then again, for instance, employers, it's much harder to capture them and to find them because they are not in your traditional spaces that you are used to. And hence, again, you know, going back to what we talked earlier, it is important to engage those Gen Zer influencers and people ultimately who know where Gen Zers live so we can actually access them.
Yeah, and that's the three keys that I focus on with Gen Z when employers say, okay, so how should we understand the generation? I say ISA, ISA, inclusion, stability, authenticity. And what we're talking about here, and stability means financial, but also mental and emotional. What we're talking about here is the authenticity piece. And to Lily's point of 4,000 ads a day, you know, 30 years ago, I did a little bit of research. 30 years ago, it was more like 800 ads a day. So that's five times what, you know, humans used to be used to 30 years ago, which is a dramatic increase on the cognitive load that we're all processing every day. And so what Gen Z seems to have is this like built-in filter for anything that feels like a commercial or inauthentic attempt at their attention. And so if you're an employer trying to get to Gen Z and Gen Z communities, if you're going to think that ads are going to find your way into their hearts, it's, you know, you're sorely mistaken. It is about getting to those campfires. And, you know, for me, what I, you know, have spent a lot of time on is the student community, student organizations at universities. And Gen Z is going to continue to increase the importance of the communities, these saloons, these campfires, and, you know, especially on college campuses and online. And so I think Lily said it very well. You said it great, Bye-Bye. I think that is, there's a reason why all of this is moving towards more authentic connection, more campfire style, in community, meaningful discussion. And the brands and the companies, the employers that embrace that and that move to that, the ones who do it more quickly are going to succeed. And the ones who don't are going to waste a lot of money and a lot of time trying to connect to the generation.
Definitely. And I think also it's build on that and say, build your own campfire. If you're a business or an organization who's like, how do we get into these? If you've got something valuable to offer young people, build your own campfire because they will want it if it's valuable. Like Pranam said, do not try and slide ads into these communities, but look at Gymshark, look at Glossier, look at some of the biggest Gen Z building brands, Gen Z focused brands, and literally Gen Z owned brands in the world, and how quickly they built, which was all about community, and their entire tactics was about having a community and giving free value to it. So if you're trying to employ young people, tell them why, what you're looking for, what it's like to work there, but also not just the corporate stuff, like the heart and soul stuff, the vision, the values, like the fun stuff, and also break down your industry. Like if you're a finance industry, Gen Zs would have loved to get an insight into how the GameStop and Reddit event started. Like pick big trends that are happening in the news that are happening around the world and see how you can relate it to the audience and give your unique insight onto it. And that's really where you build that community, is if you stay relevant and on the pulse and you're saying, okay, we're reading the same news as you, and this is our take on it, and this is how we're going to give you value from it. Then you can get in your job ads, and then you can get in your kind of like fine-tuned, like your more detailed things, you draw them down the funnel. But I'd say if you are going to start creating content and you are going to try and build a community, get a Gen Zer in to help you do that, because just like Pranam said, we will know if it's been made by a 50-year-old who's like just gone on like tips for Insta ads or like building communities. Like get someone who knows what they're doing, have the conversation, include them in the building process, and your results will be incredible.
I love that, and I couldn't agree more with it. And I, you know, and you talked about this sort of heart and soul piece, and something came to my mind, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to say it anyway because it's a bold thing, and if people want to come after me, allow them. This is my platform; I can say what I want, right? So,
if you can't, who can?
And we can swear, and we can do all sorts of things. No, we can't. Because then I have to mark this as explicit material, and then Gen Z can't listen to it. We can't do that. So. this heart and soul piece, you know, if I think about a corporate and all these values and mission statements and all of these sort of things, often they have been artificial. They have been writings on the walls. They have been beautiful imagery. They have been, you know, intranet filled with these sort of things. But there hasn't been the heartbeat. And we have been okay with that somehow. You know, beautiful building, everyone sort of talks in the same language, but you also understand that it's all artificial. And of course it's artificial because, you know, government, you know, is an artificial environment. You know, corporate is an artificial environment. Those are artificial structures, right? So we have somehow been okay with that. But now we've got Gen Z coming in and saying, actually, we are not okay with that. There needs to be a heartbeat. When we talk about inclusion, yes, I can read it on your wall. I can read it that you've thought about it. I can read that you've thought about the definition of it. But where is the heartbeat? Where is this inclusion? Because I don't see it manifesting within your environment in day-to-day basis. And, you know, working with corporates, it still is that. And I think that's what corporates are struggling the most. Because the first thing what they want to do is for those quick fixes, how do we get these inclusion things out in social media? But they don't think about actually how do we restart or create in the first place this heartbeat. And that's a very, very hard bit because you often you can't re-engineer it. You have to build it from scratch.
It is. And I think you're right. I say the heart and soul, and I guess I don't have that association of the kind of the corporate slander, which I know is the case, which is a lot of people just post pictures or just say diversity is core to us. But this is why this is the biggest thing employers need to know about Gen Z. And I'd say my kind of core things would be accessibility, transparency, and communication. And this is the transparency that we're really talking about here, which is the transparency that even if you post this picture looking diverse and looking like a diverse team, we'll Google you and we will look at your senior leadership team. We'll look at your progression. We'll look at who you're paying, who got a bonus that year and who didn't. And these are the kind of core things which I think employers need to understand is that you can't fool Gen Z. You can't fool someone who's grown up with the internet as a resource, as a fingertip. They're not looking at books. They're looking literally at Google, at this wealth of information. So you've really, really got to be careful when you're doing the heart and soul. Make sure it is your heart and soul. If you're saying you're going to hit these targets, make sure you be hitting them and you're shouting and celebrating them. And if you're not, make sure you're transparent about that too. So this year we were going to recruit 3 neurodiverse candidates. However, we don't have the infrastructure to support them into flourishing in our workplace. Honesty and transparency. That's really important. And then ask what is needed. Say we're conducting research to see how we can change our workplace to fit people with all needs and all accessibility. And I think more and more in terms of this hyper connectivity, that accessibility is, even if you're a cis white Gen Z male, you probably will care a lot more about all of the other people. I mean, I don't know that for sure, but you have more of this connection and this, again, this hyper understanding and empathy of people around you and your age group. So it's more likely that you'll be demanding higher standards for everybody. Again, this kind of consideration of we, which is really, really important to understand. Like, it's not just the celebrating Women's Month in March. It's what are you doing throughout your company culture to ensure that women have as much of an opportunity to thrive in those cultures as anybody else.
Yeah, and I to go off of your analogy earlier, Lily, one analogy that I use, and it fits in perfectly with yours, it's almost like we planned it together, is you've got the busy highway and then you see a shop on the side, and say Gen X might have looked at the window through the window and saw the window dressing and said, oh, that looks like a pretty inclusive and diverse place. That's interesting. I like that company. And then millennials said, okay, I'm going to actually walk in the door and take a look at what's on display, what's here, what, like, let me touch and feel. And Gen Z is saying, I want to go to the stock room and see what you actually have in the back. And we're going to examine that and where the products come from and what's happening here. And so I think it is about Gen Z wants to go all the way to the back and they want to see it as authentic of a state as they can. And to Lily's point too, even if you, of course, you know, the number one factor in whether Gen Z believes you're inclusive or equality driven or not is your diverse leadership team. But if you don't have a diverse leadership team, I always say this, and it's still shocking to me to see executive bios on a website, and it talks about all the financial exams that the executive passed and the different corporate turnarounds that they executed, but they don't have one thing about the equality groups that they support or the social causes that they care about. And so if you don't have a diverse leadership team, and even if you do, just adding in some of the more heart and soul causes that your individuals or your executives care about will give the Gen Zers a better idea of what's actually in the stock room. What do you care about? What are the things that you're personally spending your time and energy on as executives?
And the worst thing would be to forget it. Sorry, I just reflecting on Black Lives Matter as well, and how so many corporations had all these emails at the start of the Black Lives Matter protest after George Floyd was murdered, and there was this whole like corporate like, God, we've got to make sure we're looking like we're doing stuff, and everyone's getting all these emails, and then that was it fizzled. There was no follow on, and I think that's the biggest kind of, there's the trace there. You know, you've got your black square on Instagram, or you've got your like company culture, we're reviewing everything. When did they follow it up? When did they say we've changed this in our leadership? When did they say we're making sure that black people in the office have mentors and peer support? And do you know what I mean? There was no consistency in it. And I think if there were Gen Z leaders at the time of the Black Lives Matter protests, I think there would have been a whole lot more of a ricochet of effects from it. Well, I hope so anyway.
At the end of the day, you know, we are coming to 12 months since George Floyd was murdered, and looking back and looking around, not a lot has changed. But going back to sort of my twofold question, and so obviously Pranam, you mentioned this notion of cognitive load or mental load on Gen Zers. So my question is, how do you protect your energy and look after your mental health? You know, how does a Gen Z, or even more importantly, potentially their parent or guardian or even employer, can spot unhealthy patterns early and extend their support and help? So out of our ignorance, we don't just say, oh, it's just a phase. Oh, they're just, you know, teenagers, you know, that will go away. And then, you know, one day they've harmed themselves or something, you know, irreversible has happened. So how can we spot these triggers early and extend our help and support to this generation so they can reach their full potential?
Well, it is a very hard question, because I've brought this up to large employers about, you know, giving Gen Z a break from technology while they're working, even if just going for a walk or using a pen and paper or a marker and a whiteboard, giving them the ability to do that, giving them the chance to do that, encouraging it, a little bit of off-screen time. And employers, they're dumbfounded at how they could do that, because they think, well, we're relying on Gen Zers for technology, and why would we ever want them off of their screen when they're with us? So it's a little bit of a catch-22. You can get creative, of course, but I do think that screen time is ultimately, and especially phone time, is ultimately the thing that you find study after study when it comes to just, you know, scrolling and reading on a screen. That's what leads to depressive symptoms and anxiety. And so I know it sounds like a counterintuitive and unproductive thing, but it is one of those, you got to take, one step back and two steps forward type of thing.
It is a really hard question. but I think there's something about changing that feedback loop. So where else can young people get validation from if it's not on their phone? And I think you're completely right. Like, time blocking time away from your phone to be like, okay, on this break, I'm going to be doing this. But I guess it's that thing of, what is the interaction that they get out of going for that walk, or going for that lapse of screen time? How do we revalidate Gen Z mindset without technology? And I think that's that's the hardest nut to crack, because it's already so ingrained of this like loop of getting positive reinforcement from social media. So what, when you go on that walk, you're not going to get that sense of endorphins. You're not going to get that rush of dopamine. So maybe it is a fast walk, so you get you get the endorphins, but I don't think that would even, you couldn't convince a Gen Z didn't want to go on a walk to. So I think that also has to be these kind of higher arching validation. We know that Gen Z love community and feeling part of community and culture. So what about in the workplace, could we bring that to them too? Is it in those, that time off, they're hosting a talk with other members of the organization about Gen Z and social media, about something they're interested in, about passion project? Is it that you say, listen, I know this isn't part of your work brief, but we really want to be better at recycling. Like, is that something you can help with? And these might sound super reductionary, and I'm not reducing all of Gen Z's to like people who care about climate and work culture, but validation is key for anybody. And if you're stuck in this cycle loop of phone and technology, how can we change that loop so that people feel like they have a purpose? Everyone wants their why. Everyone wants a purpose. So if we're changing that purpose to feeling, not just being a cog in the machine, not just being someone who turns up at work every day and switches off and like plugs himself into their laptop, but who also, you're trying to fight a battle in your workplace as well. How do you include them in that conversation? An idea I really love is reverse mentoring. So the idea that everyone has a CEO or a senior leader that they mentor, but they also mentor back as a young person. They tell them what their life's like, what they expect from leadership, what their kind of purpose is in the workplace. And I think tapping into that, those feelings of inclusivity, like what are your ideas on accessibility? How do you think we should run our social media? What should we do here? But obviously making sure that they're being paid for it and it's not just loads of extra work that they're kind of just like shoving onto them, like now feel included, like I'm listening to you. So I think everything also has nuance. So also asking the people in your workplace, again, ask the young people in your workplace, say, how can we make this a better environment for you? How can we make you not look at your phone every single second of a day? Like how can we get you off your phone for an hour or so at different time for tasks? And I think again that will probably come up with so many more ideas as well, just by including people's voices.
Yeah, and to add just briefly on that, Lily, you bring up, you know, the importance of feedback loop, and in any sort of activity we should always have an agenda, in a sense, and the agenda gives a sense of purpose, like you talked about, and having simple progress bars, even if it's off screen. Like if you're going on the walk and there might be three places you want to see by a certain time, or there might be a reason why you're going to go check out this thing, or, you know, if it's a work related discussion, you might be going on a walk with a colleague. Having some sense of purpose and some check boxes along the way, as simple as that sounds, that's how we're wired, of course, and that's how, you know, we create these feedback loops. So taking the feedback loops that we get from the on screen and trying to replicate it off screen, it works on our brains. And so I think it's a great point.
I love that. And Lily, you mentioned that, you know, if leaders are tapping into Gen Z, be it potential or knowledge, you should get paid for that. And I think you should say that a little bit louder, because we've been the mugs this whole time for getting all of these sort of side little things for free, including diversity and inclusion. We're still doing it for free. So no, you're absolutely right. I love that. But what I also love that you both talked about was, you know, coming into these spaces and being very intentional. And hence, you know, my last question for this conversation is sort of, you know, and we've also sort of already alluded to it as we've talked about, you know, workplaces. How companies need to redesign the work experience to make it more engaging for Gen Z? And maybe some tips, and I know you've already talked about it, but if you had to sort of sum it up and give some great tips to the employers on how to engage you and how to redesign their work experiences so they don't only look good on the paper or on the wall or on social media, but actually is reflected in the actual work culture.
A simple one is having, back to what Lily was saying, these feedback loops. Feedback loops that are automated are great, but feedback loops that are in person or face to face are even better. So 5-minute feedback times, you know, there's a stat that 67% of Gen Zers are happy with just 5 minutes of feedback from their manager versus half of millennials, 50% of millennials are happy with just 5 minutes. So like there's a little bit more of a satisfaction with quicker time periods of feedback. And so if you can give quick feedback and short feedback to Gen Z, that goes a long way. And it helps with the feedback loop that you want to create for them. And then, you know, I know it sounds as basic as possible, but the value, how highly Gen Z values honesty is, can't be overstated. And so in those 5-minute feedback sessions, trying to cut to the core of, you know, where you are and where they are, is, I think, paramount. You don't need to be as politically diplomatic about everything. You know, it's like the craving for authentic, meaningful discussion is what Gen Z is looking for, because from a technology standpoint, you can see it's a breath of fresh air if they can have a real conversation with a real person instead of, you know, the all the social media that they might have to engage with otherwise. So, the 5-minute feedback, creating that quick loop for them, and then being as honest as possible, as fast as possible in that session is what I've found to be statistically important when you're working with or creating that work, experience for Gen Z.
Yeah, I'd fully agree with all of those points. And I'd say almost in the back of that is that it's important that these aren't additions that you're just plopping on to your workplace, but this should be how you think about your work culture. There is so much research and resources out there about the importance of diversity in the workplace and how having diverse teams increases productivity and production. And that goes across the board for ethnicity, gender, neurodiversity, cognitive diversity, disability, binary, not, do you know what I mean? It's everything. So first of all, commit to changing your work culture that works for everyone. And that will include Gen Z. Do you know what I mean? It's not just like segmenting for this Gen Z. That will include everyone. That will increase your business productivity, your revenue, your entire business model will benefit from having an inclusive work culture and you committing to it. And then on that one, accessibility, 100%, and prioritizing that and making sure that your workplace is genuinely accessible to people from all different walks of life. And that includes the nitty gritty of what your CV and how you recruit for jobs, what job boards you're posting on. Stop just posting, looking in the same places for grads. If you're in the UK, why are you just going to Oxbridge? There are hundreds of universities in the UK with amazing graduates. Are you surprised that you're getting people who think and talk exactly the same people because you're only recruiting from two red brick universities? So think about like who and how you're recruiting. And that will change your dynamic as well of Gen Z. Again, the transparency, and that is your plans for increasing representation. If you're a CEO of a massive company, chances are you've got an all-white board and you've got many white employees. Chances are, if you're in one of these FTSE 100s or whatever. So what's your roadmap to creating that representation across the board? How are you getting more people in minority groups through the doors and actually thriving in your workplace than they are in leadership positions, not just entry-level jobs? What is your progression for mentoring? What is your progression for one-to-ones? How are you coaching people? Are you creating safe spaces for people of color? Are you creating safe spaces for non-binary people? All these questions you need to ask yourself. Where can people actually thrive? Once they're through the doors, where are they thriving and how are they thriving? And are you committed to that? And the last one is communication. And that relates again to getting people through the doors to begin with, how you're talking online, making sure that you're you're hiring Gen Z to post Gen Z content. You're not trying to make Gen Z content. Can I reiterate that again? And then making sure that you're creating this community around your business and your organization. That is what brand affinity is, a community around your brand, which you can do very easily if you just type in www.thinkhalffull.com. but cheeky plug. But it's true. There's ways that you can build that community and tap into communication and be authentic to yourself. So yeah, accessibility, representation, well, that's transparency, and communication, and committing to that change across work culture.
A little cheeky plug in, but I'll leave it in there because it's important. Both of you, thank you so much for this conversation. It's been really, really insightful. It's been, you know, full of energy. You know, you've both kept it full of information, full of things to reflect on, but also very, very positive. And I think at least I have got a great hope for the next generation now walking into our workplaces and demanding more. So thank you so much, Pranam. Thank you so much, Lily. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you for hosting.
Yeah, thank you, Baiba. Thank you, Lily. I really enjoyed it.
That was beautiful. Thank you so much for joining us, and I hope you had a pen and paper handy, because Lily and Pranam were raining gems and great tips for organizations that are working and communicating to digital natives. Lily and Pranam are both doing a fantastic work in this space, so please connect with them using details in the show notes. We are also coming to an end of the Change Agent Season 1, and next week will be the final episode where I will be bringing all of the intersections of diversity that we have spoken about over the past 4 months under the same roof, and assessing the real progress we've made thus far and looking at the work still ahead of us. I look forward for all of you joining me then, and in the meantime, stay safe, and until next time.